What that means is there's a small island somewhere in the South Pacific where you have total saturation.
That's true. That where I walk as a god.
You walk as a god.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 428, The Artist Rolls. Have you ever wanted to analyze an artist's work through random rolls of a 20-sided Dungeons & Dragons die? Of course you haven't. But that's exactly what Jamie Gower and Sean Mitchell do on their podcast, The Artist Rolls. Jamie and Sean interviewed me back in May of 2014, and their first roll of the die required me to assign a number value to all the different hats I wear as a playwright, actor, director, etc. And after some immensely flattering and unworthy comparisons to Shakespeare, Jamie asked me if that kind of multiple hat wearing was common.
I think it's common, actually. I do think that, even if you are just an actor, you have to, you are self-employed, you are running a business where you are the product.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out how to sell that product, which is you, and how to manage that product, which is you. So I think you have to wear a lot of hats, even as a creative person. In this particular case, in my case, with the Reduced Shakespeare Company, it was when I came aboard. I had just spent 8 years working for a theater in New Hampshire called American Stage Festival. And so I was familiar with running a large organization and having a theater company with a specific style and hiring directors and stage managers and actors, etc. And when I came into the RSC, they still kind of thought of it as a three-man kind of band. They thought, well, you can't just change the members around. And I was saying, well, I think the Reduced Shakespeare Company could be more of a theater company. With a house style and a repertoire of plays and an ensemble of actors going around performing the kinds of works. Because I had just come from that arena. So it took me a couple of years to persuade the guys that this was an idea, and it really became a positive idea when Adam wanted to stay in London and realize, well, hey, wait a second. If I front a UK-based company, then the other guys can stay in the US and be the US-based company.
Right.
So, and that's been that. Honestly, I make more of my living as a playwright now than as an actor because I have a company that produces my plays.
Right.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So that's kind of nice. I guess Charles Ludlam had the Ridiculous Theater Company that produced his plays. You know, the Atlantic Theater Company probably produces a lot of Mammoth's plays. Yes, Shakespeare had his company that produced his plays, and he was one of the owners of the company. So it was all about the good thing is I have a company that produces all my plays. The bad thing is it's everybody wants the new play. Everybody goes, well, hey, that's a great new show. What are you doing next? We just finished this one.
So even if you've just done comedy, are they already asking for the one after comedy?
They're already asking for the one after comedy. And we have some ideas of what that will be, but still that means we got to carve out the time and find the time to do it.
Sure.
Yeah. Can you tell us what you're leaning to, or is it far too early to ask?
I can tell you, but I'm not going to.
Okay. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Hey, Austin, we're going to move on to the next section of the character sheet, which is the mediums. We've already talked about that some with the previous section, but I'm going to roll that D8 and D10 again for you and see what you get.
Okay.
Ooh, an 8 and a 9. You get 17 points to distribute among these five mediums.
Okay.
Live, video, audio, physical, and print and web. Where?
Which is our best mediums roll yet. So,
congratulations. Okay.
On that.
This is, you know, where you spend your time. Where do people consume your work?
I think most people see us live. But I think more people have probably seen the complete works of William Shakespeare on YouTube than have seen us live all over the world.
Yeah.
The podcast gets heard on average by 3,000, 3,500 people every week around the world. Mm-hmm. So, which seems like a small, it seems like a great number until you consider it's the entire world, and then $3,500. Well, that sounds like not very many, but whatever.
Point 0.01% of the population.
See, you went to Stanford. You went to Stanford, so you can do the math. I can't do that.
Except I just made it up, and it's probably wrong. Because that's because I went to Stanford.
I figure, though, that what that means is there's a small island somewhere in the South Pacific where you have total saturation.
That's true. That where I walk as a god.
You walk as a god.
Sometimes people read this, discover us through the scripts or find us on the web. Sometimes the video is like played in history and English classes. Some people catch us via the podcast, and some people discover us just by coming to the theater, the old-fashioned way.
I'm curious about this. Talk about buying scripts. I've seen high school productions of Shakespeare abridged. I've seen, you know, I've been in two productions. I've seen it done a lot. How many times a year does it go out there for people to produce?
My guess is that it's like every month probably of the year, possibly every week, there might be one of our scripts being done somewhere.
Yeah. Well, and there's a huge built-in audience. I mean, every show we sold out. We're in a theater where not every show sold out.
Well, it's just a great idea. I mean, particularly the Shakespeare show. It's just a great idea. The complete works of Shakespeare all in an evening. It's like, oh, it's conceivable from an audience standpoint. I get it. It's sometimes less clear to why you would go see something called the Complete World of Sports abridged. Well, wait, what is that going to be? If you know the Reduced Shakespeare Company, that becomes a little more easy to conceive.
Yeah.
But if you don't, then it's like, wait, what?
The thing I love too is that the character archetypes work for any age in any size theater. The first time I saw it, it was three college students.
Okay.
In a tent in Victoria, British Columbia, and it worked perfectly for them.
Yeah.
And then I saw yours on video, and I've seen like four or five productions, and every single one, it's a different set of people, and yet you've got those archetypal relationships.
One of the things we like to try to do is, I think amongst the three original guys, it just happened that there were three very distinct types. Right. The egghead intellectual, which is kind of the part I play, the ambisexual man-child, and the kind of older, wiser straight man or enforcer. He was less of an enforcer in Daniel Singer's characterization.
See, that was the part. That was my part.
You were the enforcer. You were there to keep us on track, as you are doing so well in this podcast. you were there to he's there to keep us on track. And so when we're looking, sometimes what it's very hard. There are two big problems I sometimes see with other people producing our scripts is that one is that they think it's funny, so they need to act it funny instead of taking it as seriously as you would take any play. And the other is each of the three guys wants to be the funny one. And that you can't have three guys being wacky funny. It's exhausting and it's annoying.
Yes.
And but each guy gets his moment, and the other two guys need to support that at different times. And there's comic gold out of the conflicts between three different types of people. So when we're hiring new actors, it's sometimes hard. We'll find talented actors. We'll go, you don't quite fit any of the archetypes. You're sort of good for this and this. You're sort of good for this and this. You fall between two stools. You're not, and that's hard sometimes because you want to find that. But in as much as we're casting a theater company, we're also casting a comedy team.
Yeah.
And sometimes my directions to the enforcer will be, you need to access your inner Mo Howard. because this just needs, hey, what are you doing? Why, yada, yada. You know, you just need that kind of energy and passion.
I'm Alexandra Sokoloff, author of the Huntress FBI Thrillers, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Our now 82-city UK and Ireland tour of the complete history of Comedy Abridged continues this week with performances in Nottingham, Barnsley, Loughborough, Tewkesbury, and Melton Mowbray, and then continues around the countries to Yeovil, Chatham, Worthing, Canterbury, Bedford, Neath, Port Talbot, Newtown, Hedge End, Stourport, Cardiff, Hemel Hempstead, Lincoln, Peterborough, Harlow, Christchurch, Andover, Colchester, Hartford, Hereford, High Wycombe, Swindon, Cardigan, Brecon, Llanelli, Camberley, Grantham, Harrogate, Solihull, Ludlow, Exeter, Galway, Newton Abbey, Downpatrick, Derry, Londonderry, Westacre and Norfolk, Wakefield, Barnstable, Blackwood, Chipping Norton, Pershore, Hounslow, Basingstoke, Guildford, Tenterden, Banbury, Derby, Bolton, Wolverhampton, Worcester, Dumfries, Stranraer, Oxford, and finally, just added, Wellingborough. Also, this spring in the U.S., we'll be playing East Lansing and Traverse City, Michigan, Manchester, New Hampshire, Princeton, New Jersey, and Frederick, Maryland. Plus, more U.S. dates this summer and fall, which will be added to our website as soon as we nail them down. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
In any sort of threesome, you always get that dynamic. It's always, almost always, two against one, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes, and those sides change. Of course, the ultimate, greatest threesome, triad of power, holy trinity, is Spock, Kirk, McCoy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, the head, the heart, the groin. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, never mind.
You know who's who.
Yeah, I figured it out. In less than half an hour, you brought it around to Star Trek.
See?
So,
See?
Yeah, it took a little longer than I was thinking. But,
I know, I apologize.
I know you managed it. Managed it.
And we are going to move on to the fourth section of our character sheet, which is called Style. Now, Austin, if you look every week,
I have to say style.
Style. If you look at that diagram, we've got those two axes from prepared to... improvisational, or is it spontaneous now?
Spontaneous.
And from collaborative to solo. Now, we could explain a lot about what we think this graph is, but what strikes you about it? Where do you find yourself?
Well, I mean, in my business, you kind of have to be in all of those quadrants. You need to have access to all those abilities. I guess I would say I would be near the top of the bottom left quadrant.
Okay.
I am collaborative and generally prepared, but I need to be close to my spontaneity.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a whole bunch of times where all of us in the Reduced Shakespeare Company has to be able to step down stage for a solo turn.
Yeah.
So
put a circle there where you think you are, and then like draw some arrows. I like arrows.
We've talked to people that feel they're in an area and they're trying to move to another. We've had people that feel like there's two different areas that they spend time in depending on what they're doing. Mm-hmm. We've had people that just went, I'm here. And they write something down. And they say, that's me right there.
Right.
Sounded like you're feeling that there's kind of an area where you are, but by the same token, circumstances may tug you in a different direction.
Yeah, well, and I think the Reduced Shakespeare Company scripts are definitely collaborations between myself and Reed, and then also a collaboration with the actors who help us develop the script on stage. But much of the scripts are Reed and I going away and writing alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, we do much of the writing work by ourselves, but then we bring it to the other guy and bring it to the other guys then to really make it fly. You know, I always think about, you know, if a writer or a playwright or a screenwriter you know, doesn't want his words changed, really, then he needs to write a novel. You know, because an actor's going to have an impulse, and you know, a smart playwright will respect an actor's impulse, a good one. You know, you always got to pick your collaborators well, obviously, but and an actor has to be respectful of the fact that it's ultimately the writer's script. But it, by the same token, theater is a collaborative thing. So if you really want to be a solo writer, then there's plenty of other arenas that I wouldn't recommend the theater.
Makes sense.
So I wanted to ask a follow-up on doing the solo turn in the show. Do you, uh-huh. Is that more an improvisational thing, or is that a prepare? Are you talking about the sort of stand-up, or are you talking about a prepared monologue?
Usually it's the more prepared thing. For instance... In the Complete Works of William Shakespeare, when the Adam character launches into the "What a piece of work is man" speech.
That is such a powerful scene.
It's a great moment. And but one of the reasons that it's great is that it comes from that character. Uh-huh. You know, it doesn't come from one of the other guys. And the other reason is that it takes him by surprise, and it takes the other two guys who've been riding his ass the entire time, takes them by surprise. So it's a great moment, but it's born of character, and that actor needs to be able to take that moment. You know, the actor playing Hamlet, for instance, has to be able to take that entire to be or not to be breakdown and make it something interesting. Yeah. Yeah. But then there are certain times, you know, when something will go wrong something either go wrong, or an audience member will do something weird, or we'll have latecomers or whatever, and we have to respond improvisationally. You know, Reed and I and Matt Rippey and Dominic Conti, we've worked so long together, we could just kind of look at each other's eyes and know,
yeah,
you got something? You got something? Because I got something. I'm ready. I'm going to go. And then, you know, and they would just go, you go, please go. You know, and that's when one guy or another goes off, and then, oh, okay, he wants to say something, please. And then you throw the focus to that guy. So it's kind of both. It's all of the above.
Mm-hmm. We're going to move on.
Okay.
Section 5.
Yes.
The superpower. You got a list of superpowers there. Choose one, and there's a number of ways you can approach it. You can say, which one of these would you like to have? Mm-hmm. Which one of these... do people say you have? Which one do you think you have?
Well, with a name like Austin, I have been called the $6 million man a lot over the years. Not so much recently, but I have been called bionic. It's not true. I don't think anybody's ever told me I have control of the elements or telepathy or telekinesis. I don't think I've ever been... I'm not that transformative as an actor. As I said, I play four shades of pompous, not four shades of giddy and carefree. You know, so so I'm not sure that hypervision. I have had people say I've had vision, so maybe that. Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe people have said maybe I'll accept hypervision as something has been said of me. Mm. But I guess if I had to choose from this list, I would choose time control.
Mm.
Not just the ability, not only the ability to go back in time and time travel, but just to manage time better.
Yeah.
Because there are not enough hours in the day for all the things I like to do, unfortunately.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sleep being one of them.
So time control is an aspirational, but you feel that probably hypervision is something that people you work with would say, oh, yeah, he's got vision.
Well, yeah, from this list, I guess. You know, I think I have a fairly good sense of what a thing can be sometimes, a vision of what a thing can be. But I also think I have a kind of a sense of how a thing will play.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but, you know, a lot sometimes. And I've been proven wrong a lot. But a lot of times I'll go, yes, that worked exactly like I thought it was going to work.
Do you feel there's a superpower that you do have that isn't on the list?
I do. And I would call it, I'm not sure what I would call it, but it's the ability to play silly material with utter seriousness.
You're a trickster.
Is that a trickster? Okay.
I'm just off the top of my head.
I would say, you know, being both solemn and silly.
Uh-huh.
Is I think something that I can do. But then the superpower I would love to have, uh-huh. and I'm thinking about this anew because Bob Hoskins died yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
is it the Roadrunner? Was it the Roadrunner or the Wile E. Coyote's ability to draw a tunnel on a side of a hill?
Roadrunner. That's kind of that's elemental control.
Elemental? Oh, is that elemental?
In a sense, yeah.
Okay.
In a sense,
so that's what we have on the menu.
All right, that's what I want then. So okay. It's less Halle Berry as Storm and more Roadrunner, then I'm with you.
We have a graph that shows your rolls, the die rolls. And in all of them, you are above the average roll, and in some cases quite well above. All of your rolls add up to something that's quite well above average. And the final question we have today is about luck. Mm. Now, these rolls indicate you have some luck. The question is, do you believe in luck? Do you feel like you're lucky? How does luck play some sort of role in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think luck plays a role in everybody's life. And that I've had this debate with my wife too about luck. I think it takes nothing away from people's hard work. And to a certain extent, you can make your own luck, yes. But, you know, I was lucky to be born to parents who thought I was awesome,
yeah.
You know, and didn't shut down to my desire to pursue a career in the arts. I was lucky to have a kind of a talent, you know. I was lucky to be born with a sense of humor. I think I worked hard to kind of use these talents to do something. I was lucky to know Reed Martin and Jess Winfield at University of California, Berkeley, you know, because they asked me to become a member of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. I haven't been lucky in the sense that I haven't gotten that TV role or that movie mm-hmm. role that allows me to be, you know, rich enough to go do theater the rest of my life and not worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I do think luck plays a part. And I think, you know, on the other hand, I make my living in the theater. I make my living in the theater.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I'm hugely lucky.
Uh-huh.
And you've never heard of me. I mean, Neil Simon... You've heard of Neil Simon.
Yeah.
Tony Kushner, people have heard of Tony Kushner. They make good livings in the theater. You know, they haven't heard of me. And you know, a lot of the very successful and famous people we know, mostly born out of Second City, have become that way because they work very hard at it. You know, it didn't just happen for these folks. They went after it, and they're very talented, and they're very good, they're very ambitious, and they're very aggressive in it, all in good ways. But, you know, it just doesn't happen that you become a star on television. You have to be lucky with talent, lucky with looks, but you also have to be, you know, kind of ambitious and ruthless, again, in good ways.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Now, I clicked record slightly late into my conversation with Jamie and Sean. So to hear about the specific similarities between role-playing games and playwriting, go to theartistroles.com and search for my interview. Then send us your superpowers via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, Dire Wolf Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Kathleen Vargas. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to novelist Alexandra Sokoloff, who has also been interviewed on the Artist Roles podcast. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener for 128/1284 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
We have come to the end of the Artist Roles, our discussion with Austin Titchener. Thank you very much for listening. Austin, you want to take us out with anything?
Sure, I'll take you out for a drink if you come to Chicago.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.